through December 1st at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee. Top Dog Underdog tells the story of sibling rivalry between African-American brothers in a turbulent relationship punctuated with dark humor. Their names are Lincoln and Booth. The show has adult content and is not recommended for children. Again, that's Top Dog Underdog, running Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through December 1st at the Chapel Theater, 4107 Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Transpositive PDX. I'm Jean Bryant, and with us also is...
Hi, I'm Nicolette Schweizer, and I was that vocalist singing Pia Yesu. I'll be our featured vocalist tonight.
Yes. So, it's November 20th, and this is the internationally recognized Transgender Day of Remembrance. Our show tonight is dedicated to honoring those who died violently this year because of their trans identities. At first, we'd like to call your attention to two in-person Transgender Day of Remembrance gatherings that are taking place here in the metro area this evening. Up in Clark County in Vancouver at the Clark County YWCA, located at 3609 Main Street. And that's starting up at 6:30 and running until 9 p.m. tonight. And then here in North Portland at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus, located at 705 North Killingsworth. And that's starting right about now, but it also runs until 9. So for those of you who'd like to do or attend an in-person session, those are happening this evening. Now, before we go to our guests this evening, we do have four guests representing various faith practices this evening who will be offering comments and invocations, and then we'll be reading the names of those lives that were taken this year. But before we do that, we want to give you some history of the origin and evolution of Transgender Day of Remembrance. Emma Lugo and I were privileged to interview Gwendolyn Ann Smith, and she is recognized as the original organizer of what the world has now come to know as Transgender Day of Remembrance. And what we have coming up right now are some excerpts from that interview.
We're here today with Gwendolyn Ann Smith. Hello, Gwendolyn.
Hi. Thanks for having me today.
So, Gwendolyn, we're talking to you today about the Transgender Day of Remembrance and your role in helping to start Transgender Day of Remembrance. Can you first of all tell us what is the Transgender Day of Remembrance?
Well, the Transgender Day of Remembrance is an event I started in 1998 with the goal of highlighting the issue of anti-transgender violent murders and how many there are and who it's affecting. At the time, what had happened, Rita Hester, who's a trans woman who was in Boston, was murdered in 1998. And the evening after the murder, I was speaking with some Boston area trans activists I knew. And so it really struck me that the community itself had no kind of historical knowledge of the issue of anti-trans violence and how it was affecting our community. So I set out to research that. In the course of the research, I discovered just how large an issue it was, and that this was something that needed to be addressed, which led to the Day of Remembrance.
That I find that very enlightening, actually, because as it's viewed today, TDOR tends to be a more outwardly focused event, and that it initially was conceived to inform within our community.
Right. And certainly the Brandon Tina case was a large portion of where we started. I mean, that was a case that was still very active at the time of the start of Day of Remembrance, 20 years of TDOR at this point. And as, you know, growing as a community from being a very isolated community when we started this project to where we are now, those of us who are in the community, we know now that there's an issue.
Exactly.
We know about our violence. So if we were continually still focusing it inward and saying, oh, no, we need to be aware of it ourselves, we know. Now it's time to tell everyone else. Now it's time to make an issue of it outside the community.
Do you remember the very first Transgender Day of Remembrance commemoration? Can you tell us what that was like? The one that you...
I think I might still have a cold from that one. It was a very, very cold and rainy night in San Francisco. And it was about a little bit less than 100 of us in SF on Castro Street holding up signs with the names of the people we knew that had been killed at that time. And that one was actually, that was in March rather than November. And it was coinciding with a showing of the Brandon Tina story at the Castro Theater. So, yeah, I remember that one. I spoke to the crowd. I stood in the middle of Castro Street and spoke to everyone gathered in front of the Castro Theater about the importance of our lives.
And do you know how many Transgender Day of Remembrance commemorations there are now annually?
You know, I wish I did. There's hundreds, potentially thousands at this point. We try to collect as many of them we can through the website, tdor.info. But there's a lot more events that happen that we never hear about, that don't contact us. We don't require that people tell us they're having events. You know, it went from being, you know, a very small thing to something that is honored internationally.
I'd like to hear your comments on the effect of TDOR on the broader picture of actually gathering statistics on the violence internationally.
It has vastly changed in the way that the data has been collected over the years. From, you know, the early days of the project, it was literally just me pouring through newspapers and people sending me reports and stuff like this. A lot of that's changed to this day, and with more awareness, you're seeing more people tracking it and a broader sharing of information. Again, at the time that it started, there wasn't really a notion of social media that really hadn't really caught on. So the information's been pulled a lot stronger at this point.
It's really helping us to see that violence against trans women and trans people is especially impacting to trans people of color. Could you comment on that?
Yeah. You can't talk about anti-trans violence without talking about that it disproportionately affects people of color, it disproportionately affects trans women, it disproportionately trends younger individuals. It's simply not, you know, it was very easy, I suppose, in the beginning of the project to think, well, this is strictly, you know, we're talking strictly about anti-trans murders. Even looking in the face of you know, a project that was originally started with the notion of both Rita Hester and Chanel Thicket, who are both black trans women. As time has gone on, as more data has come in, yeah, this is not just a trans issue. This is an issue that affects primarily trans women of color.
It seems like we're starting to develop kind of a culture of, you know, kind of embracing our own power as trans people. So Transgender Day of Remembrance really holds an important place within that set of, you know, I don't know what you would call it, maybe rituals. Do you think that this is something that we need to continue to do into the future, you know, to acknowledge this brutality against trans people, like within our own communities? Is this something that we're going to need to do every year, like into the future?
You know, it's long been my hope that someday we'd actually see Transgender Day of Remembrance become, you know, a quaint notion, a fixture of the past, where we weren't being killed in the same ways we're being killed, and yet we're not, and yet we still see, you know, numbers remaining at best even, or in the last couple of years rising, as far as trans deaths. So I think it still is, you know, a part of our landscape, as well as these other events. And you know, you mentioned culture. I'm very glad to see a culture growing and seeing events beyond just Day of Remembrance, seeing visibility, seeing, you know, I'd love to see, speaking of Pride, I'd love to see something that we do in August around the anniversary of the Compton's Cafeteria riot, or, you know, things
yes.
like this where we really build that visibility and that community and that culture around trans issues. And yeah, this is part of that culture. And hopefully, you know, it's part of the culture for now. Hopefully in, you know, another 20 years or whatnot, the issue of trans violence won't be as pressing. But we'll see. I mean, the way things are going right now.
How do you decide what's an anti-trans crime and what's an anti-gay crime? And then how do you work with, you know, trying to sort out and flesh out language? For instance, when press calls trans women men or, you know, that sort of thing.
The latter part of that, it's very difficult because you end up in cases where they'll use birth names, birth genders. They won't provide any information whatsoever. There's a case, I've talked about this a couple of other times elsewhere, where even here in the San Francisco Bay Area, there was a murder a few years back of a trans sex worker. And a reporter contacted me directly because he wanted to cover the story, but his news affiliate wouldn't let him or didn't feel that it was relevant for him to cover it because it was a trans prostitute. Who cares? You know, they were murdered. You know, so you have a lot of cases out there that, quite frankly, we may never know about because if you're relying on the media to report them and they don't think it's a relevant story, it doesn't get covered.
So we've been speaking today with Gwendolyn Ann Smith, the founder of Transgender Day of Remembrance. And Gwen, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So now we'd like to open this segment of the show with comments and invocations from representatives of various faith practices. We'll start with Nicolette.
Hi. So I'm actually going to be speaking on behalf of Shemai Groman, who is one of our other co-hosts here on Transpositive. They had a speech they had prepared for tonight, but they were not able to make it. So I'm going to be reading their speech for them. This speech is titled Transformation, the Cycle of Life at its Finest. My name is Shemai Groman. I am an unordained high priest with the ULC, a guardian to the Cascadian Witches Council, and an apprentice Jedi to the Temple of the Jedi Force, where I practice Jedi philosophy. I am Norse pagan by belief and have history in several pagan traditions. I am currently a student of two metaphysics schools, and I am a volunteer for the Real Life Superheroes. I am a disciple of change. I attempted to transition, but was unable to due to medical barriers which prevented hormone therapy treatment. Today, I represent the pagan voices of Portland. Today, I will speak to you all about transformation. Throughout history, there has always been change. We see it in nature, when the leaves on the trees begin to change color and die, as well as when it springs back to life and bears fruit. We see it in the air around us, when the temperature rises and when it falls. We see change during the birth of a beautiful child, and we see it when that child grows old and returns to the nether just as it came from it. This is transformation, a series of change, beauty, and cycle. There are many ways in which a person recognizes transformation. To the Greeks, the goddess of the night, Nyx, takes her place next to Hemera, the goddess of the daylight. Together they work in harmony, carrying out the birth of the moon and the sun, making way for Apollo to row the sun across the sky in his great chariot. The story of Persephone talks about how the seasons began to change because she ate the seeds of the pomegranate which Hades gave to her as a form of temptation. To the Japanese, Amaterasu defied her father and professed her love for a mortal, and her father condemned her to be trapped between the veils of the night and the day, and so that became a source of beauty. She now flips the veils between the two. To the Celts, the father god and great stag, Cernunnos, goes through a journey to the underworld in the fall and is reborn again in the winter. This journey teaches the stag the lessons of each year so that when he is reborn, he is blessed with new knowledge and fresh perspective. I would go through the many gods and goddesses of change today, but I fear we might all perish from the amount of time it would take. But today, I want to talk to you about what is transformation and why is it necessary to understand it in remembrance to all those who have passed. I want to start with the very beauty of transition itself. Every day, many of us ask ourselves why we were born the way we were. Many times when we seek to ask others why this is, we are met with hostility, judgment, and often violence and hatred. We look at ourselves each day, and we feel like the gods have made a mistake. I am here to tell you that they haven't made a mistake. Instead, they have given us a mission. That mission is the mission of change. We must not look at ourselves as simply put in the wrong body, but instead our bodies are a canvas waiting to be painted, to tell our story, to show the world that even in the face of hatred, we will shine through the darkness, for we are valid too. When Arachne challenged Athena to a duel of weaving, she chose to show the truth about the gods, to show that she knew what went behind the great entrance to Mount Olympus. Athena chose to show only one side of the truth and omitted the turmoil. Athena became angry and cursed Arachne to forever hold the shape of a spider. Arachne could have taken this as a chance to become vengeful, but instead she accepted her situation and used it to continue weaving, to continue telling her story. And from that moment on, she became a symbol of truth and transformation. We are similar to Arachne. Despite the hatred and barriers our society places in front of us, we still accept that they may try to change us. We must also show that we are not afraid, and no matter what label they deem fit for us, we will still fight for change. I would like us to take a moment and look around at each other. Go ahead, please do look at each other. Look at the smiles, the beauty, the everlasting life that flows through each of you. All those whom have perished to create this room, this space, this power between us, their sacrifice is not in vain. As Anubis guides them to the underworld, our smiles and love remind us that just as they enter, they look back and they smile too. As I close this sermon, let us call upon the four directions, and with each we remember those who walked the four directions and those whom walk with us. Hail to the direction of the east, element of air. As the east guides us to the new pathway, we remember our place among those who begin, those who are learning, to the birth of change. We call upon our respective gods in hope that they teach us. Hail to the direction of the south, element of fire. We call upon the phoenix, the great firebird, the very element of death and rebirth. Through fire, energy is cleansed, made whole again, and exacted through ritual and love. Let us remember those who walked the path of cleansing. Let them show us that we too can cleanse ourselves. Hail to the direction of the west, element of water. It is now that we remember our journeys that they have taken, the journeys that they have taken. We call upon our respective gods to help guide us towards the end, to show us all lessons that were learned during their journeys. As the sun sets to the west, we remember that all things come to an end, and it is time to accept. Hail to the direction of the north, element of earth. We take this moment to acknowledge our ancestors and their ancestors before them. Death has come, and as the great cycle of life closes, we shed not tears of sorrow, but tears of joy. Let it be known among us that as we came from the earth, we must return to it. We call upon our respected gods of death, and we thank them for the life our ancestors gave so that we can live. Death, birth, journey, lessons, and reincarnation. These are the five principles to the cycle of life. Transformation is the key element between these stages. When we transform ourselves, we are not only learning to love ourselves for who we are painting the great canvas of life, and to our ancestors, we are using the paints in which they have given us. Thank you, and blessed be.
Thank you.
My name is Davina Bookbinder. I'm studying to be a rabbi out of a school in Los Angeles called the Academy for Jewish Religion, California, though I live here in Portland. I'm 32, I'm poly, I'm vegan, I'm queer, and I'm trans. Now, the Torah begins in a garden. When God creates the first human, whom the rabbis often say is an androgynous, or as we might say today, intersex, God places them in a garden. And that idea of beginning in a garden has stuck with me throughout this last year. You see, I try and think of what it takes to actually grow a garden. Now, we know it takes sunshine and water and seeds and lots of love and acceptance, but it also takes fertilizer. Now, not your common ordinary fertilizer. I'm talking about the toxic, putrid, wretched fertilizer that you might pick up at your local store, organic farm, or news media. You see, I've been tempered in that fertilizer, raw sewage levels of fertilizer. Now, I haven't been physically assaulted yet, but I have been tempered by the 46% of Americans who don't think that there should be new laws to protect me, by the almost 100 million Americans who do not believe that I and the 1.5 million other trans folks actually exist, like we're some sort of fairy tale creatures. Now, this fertilizer stings, and it smells, and it hurts if I touch it for too long, but it also empowers me. It's my fire. It ignites my soul. It stokes my passion and fervor to spread every story about a trans murder which does not get covered. It pushes me to stand up when I do not want to and say I am trans. And it empowers me to shout that I am here, I have rights, and none of us are going anywhere. But if you only dumped fertilizer on a garden, what would you have? Just a pile of fertilizer. You need sunshine and hugs and love and acceptance and support. About 8 months ago, I had an experience which cemented that support in me when I went back to my Orthodox Jewish congregation in Los Angeles. I walked in for the first time as a woman, sat in the women's section because it is gendered, segregated seating. And one after another, women came up to me and told me how happy they were to see me, how proud they were of me, that I was there, that I was alive, that I was simply just living as me. Now, being different is hard, and most of us, we want to fit in some way. Being accepted feels good. And there are days when I look in the mirror and I see her and it's great, and there are days when I look in the mirror and I see him and it hurts. And that fertilizer tends to sting just a little bit more. And on those days, it's not through the sheer force of will that I keep going. It's through support and love and through you, everyone who is listening to this broadcast, everyone showing up at every Trans Day of Remembrance commemoration. Because of all the people online who send me heart emojis when I pout about a bad day, and of all the people who, regardless of gender, stand up and say we deserve rights, who say that we exist. Now, as many as we can name, there are thousands more trans and non-conforming people who have been killed that we cannot, and for whom no mourner's prayer can be said. We mourn their senseless deaths, and we give thanks for their lives and their teachings and their brief glow of each holy flame. And we pray for the resolve to root out the injustice and ignorance and cruelty that grow despair. We remember them. We remember the thousands more who have taken their own lives. We remember the thousands more than that, including myself, who have tried. And we pray, God, that those who perpetrate hate and violence will speedily come to understand that your creation has many faces, many genders, and many holy expressions. Blessed are they who have allowed their divine image to shine in the world. And blessed are you, God, in whom no light is extinguished.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Cassidy Brown. I'm a priestess in the reclaiming tradition of witchcraft, which blends an ecofeminist spirituality with activism. And I'm glad to be with you tonight. And I'm glad to be with you in this season, because this is traditionally the time of year when pagans gather to honor our ancestors and remember our dead. We may cook their favorite food, sing songs. We tell their stories and we say their names, because we know that what is remembered lives. And so tonight we remember the lineage of trans ancestors. We can start with those whose names we know: Marsha P. Johnson, Lou Sullivan, Lily Elb, Albert Cashier, and many, many more, and thank them for the work they have done in this world. And we can honor and remember those whose names are lost to us, who may have been ignored or demeaned or had to live in secret. And we honor and remember those trans and two-spirit ancestors who were exalted and given sacred roles as priests and prophets. We honor and remember all those who trusted their own authority to know themselves and who dared to be something other than they were told. And we can also welcome and invite our bright and wise and well trans ancestors who love their descendants beyond all reason to be with us in our lives. And so wherever you are, I invite you to take a moment and just take a breath and just open your heart to that invitation, to your bright and well ancestors, that trans lineage to be with you. And take a breath and notice if you can feel or imagine their presence, their love and support and encouragement, the bright way they watch over the work that we do together. And take a breath and bring some of that love and support deep into your body where you can find it later. And and take a breath of that love and support and breathe it out into the world to all of the trans people who may not be listening, who maybe have forgotten this mighty lineage, who maybe need the support of their ancestors today. And finally, let's take a breath of gratitude for our bright and well trans ancestors and their blessings in our lives, and for all the lineage that came before that allows us to be here in this moment tonight. Thank you, trans ancestors. Blessed be.
Good evening. I am Leo Bancroft, an ELCA pastor from The Flame, a healing community of faith for LGBTQ and ally folks here in Portland. As a transgender man, I am so grateful for all of you here tonight listening with us and for those who organized this. On Friday, non-binary trans actor, speaker, and author Jeffrey Marsh tweeted, "I'm wearing a skirt today, and some random on the street was just like, 'You gotta come to Jesus, okay?' And I said, 'How do you know I'm not Jesus?' They were stunned into silence." And Jeffrey Marsh is right. I love this tweet on so many levels. It also seems appropriate for today, as we reflect on the loss of trans folks this year to violence and suicide. We may be looking for God in the midst of these tragedies, or for some solace in our grief. Jeffrey's words remind me of my faith tradition. The face of our neighbor is the face of Jesus. God is present in each one of us. This can be helpful to remember in times of suffering and loss. God is present with and suffers with those who are in pain. God has a particular care for those cast aside by society, and God does not leave the side of those who are dying, but embraces them with arms of love and acceptance. Jeffrey Marsh's tweet also reminds me that our joyful self-expression and authentic lives are divine. God is there too. As we grieve those lost too soon, we remember that they were beloved and worthy of love. The world does not shine as brilliantly without them with us. We also remember that each of us, each of you listening here, also is beloved and worthy of love. At my little church, The Flame, we have a tagline, "You have a place here." Trans folks, please know that you have a place here. You are beautifully and wonderfully made, woven in the image of the divine. You are named and seen and known and loved. On the day of my name change was legal in 2014, I drove out to the beach and met a group of friends. We had a campfire and gazed at the stars, telling stories of our favorite memories of friendship. At one point, one of my friends and I walked away from the fire towards the waves lapping on the shore, and he pointed out the constellations, including the constellation for Leo, my name. Isaiah 40 tells us that God creates the stars and names each one. Seeing the Leo constellation on the night the courts recognized my name, I also felt named by God too, named and seen and known and loved. God calls each of us by our new names. To those we have lost this past year and in years past, we lift up your names with candles and song. We remember you in our communities and in our churches. We write your names in the stars and on our hearts. God knows each one and calls them by their authentic chosen names. To those who struggle to be seen or exist or be safe, to those who grieve or are at risk, we thank you for the gift of your existence, of your divine, beautiful self. We claim with confidence and defiance that God weeps with us and embraces us and those we have lost in compassionate and merciful arms. God writes in the stars and in the sunset, on the shoreline, in the twirl of a skirt or an unexpected purple flower, in the turning of a leaf, the hug of a friend, or a confident stride, that you are God's beloved child and you are holy.
All of us here in the studio are taking a moment to just reflect on those thoughts. We will now read the names of the 24 known that lost their lives here in the United States of America this year simply because of their trans identities. And know that 85% of these names are the names of persons of color.
Chloe Saga, Portland, Oregon.
Brooklyn Brianna Stevenson, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Brandy Seals, Houston, Texas.
Zachariah Z. Fry, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Krista Lee Steele Netzlin, North Adams, Massachusetts.
Vicky Gutierrez, Los Angeles, California.
Celine Walker, Jacksonville, Florida.
Tonya Harvey, Buffalo, New York.
Felicia Mitchell, Cleveland, Ohio.
Amia Trey Berryman, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Sasha Wall, Chicago, Illinois.
Carla Patricia Flores Pavon, Dallas, Texas.
Nino Fortson, Atlanta, Georgia.
Gigi Pierce, Portland, Oregon.
Antasha Devine Sherrington English, Jacksonville, Florida.
Diamond Stevens, Meridian, Mississippi.
Catalina Christina James, Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh my goodness, sorry.
Keisha Pokey Wells, Cleveland, Ohio.
Sasha Garden, Orlando, Florida.
Dejane Stanton, Chicago, Illinois.
Vontashia Bell, Shreveport, Louisiana.
Shanti Tucker, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
London Moore, Port Charlotte, Florida.
Kiara Minaj Carter Fraser, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh,
That's a wonderful closeout. That's Nicolette Schweizer singing.
That's me, yeah. Thank you.
It's moving, and I'm impacted. I've got to take a few deep breaths here as we remember those. This last segment of the show, we want now to deal with some of the more activist and political, social aspects of the impacts of the violence that we're remembering tonight. And I was honored to be present at the vigil, the Trans Day of Remembrance vigil that took place here in Portland on Sunday. And among the speakers at that vigil was Senator Jeff Merkley. Not only did he speak, he stayed for the entire time, including staying afterwards to visit with attendees. And unfortunately, we couldn't get Jeff Merkley here to speak for himself tonight. But I did transcribe a few of his comments, and so I have some direct quotes from his comments from Sunday, and I'd like to read some of those. Senator Merkley said, "This transgender community has often been the subject of hate speech and acts of violence at a rate we've seen almost nowhere else in America. And it's a challenge that has been amplified by the acts of our current president. The attitude coming out of the Oval Office has increased the hate speech. It's increased the acts of violence, doubling our responsibility in the Senate to push back against that speech, against that violence. In the face of all this, it's so important that we stand together, that we stand together side by side, that we stand together to lift our voices, to embrace our transgender fellow Americans, and to work towards the vision of equality of opportunity in the United States of America." End quote. Now, Senator Merkley spoke quite a bit about the upcoming sessions of Congress now that we have a shift in the House of Representatives. And Senator Merkley has been the sponsor of the Equality Act, which has been languishing in Congress due to the lack of willingness to act on it by the House of Representatives. We're expecting, hopefully, to see that situation shift here in the near future. And because Jeff Merkley is the sponsor of that bill in the Senate, he was reflecting on his experience there. And the reason that he was asked to sponsor that the Equality Act in the United States Senate is due to the experience in the state of Oregon, when in 2007 the state of Oregon passed similar legislation. And so it seemed appropriate for the senator from the state of Oregon to be the sponsor at the national level for that act. So this is a quote from Senator Merkley's talk on Sunday. "When Senator Kennedy asked me to sponsor the Equality Act in the Senate, I told him I would only do that if it was fully inclusive of our transgender community." End quote. I think that's significant because some of the work that has been done in the past has left us out. And so we have great hope here in the next 2 years that perhaps we will see some actual protections placed solidly into law. And Senator Merkley assured us that the Equality Act will be one of the top 10 priorities of the new House of Representatives in the coming years, and that there are over 40 co-sponsors in the Senate. This really bodes well. Now, with that, we have a pre-recorded piece that also addresses activism around this, and especially by representatives of persons of color. And so I'd like to get that pre-recorded interview played now.
Hello, my name is Umi Vera, and I am the campaign director at Familia Trans Queer Liberation Movement, an organization that began 5 years ago in response to immigration and ICE detentions and forced deportations of community members, particularly working within the intersections of queer and trans liberation, addressing the instances that, for example, in Santa Ana 5 years ago, there was a detention center specifically for trans women, and many situations that were occurring with solitary confinement and things like that. So we've had campaigns around organizing for the liberation of our queer and trans community from cages and detention centers, and really ultimately all detention centers, and freeing all detainees, primarily by calling for an abolition to ICE. And it's really good to be talking to you all on this very special show and event, specifically talking about Trans Day of Remembrance. We at Familia are also celebrating a few events, Trans Diaspora of Resilience. We have an event here in Portland in coalition with Ori Gallery, one of the first contemporary Black, queer, and gender nonconforming led gallery and arts installations here in Portland on North Mississippi. And the event is also in collaboration with Sankofa Northwest, Collective Northwest. They were previously PFLAG Black chapter and have transformed their organizing and their organization in incredible ways for Black liberation and queer justice and resistance here in Portland. And also the collaboration is with Forward Together, a social justice organization led by genderqueer migrant communities all over the country, and us, Familia. We did want to address with our communities today a little bit of the work that we're doing. We specifically have a campaign that we're highlighting and mobilizing nationwide right now. We are seeking justice for Roxana. Roxana Hernandez was a trans migrant woman from Honduras who died at ICE custody at the age of 33 just a few months ago. Roxana was part of the second community caravan that arrived in the U.S. Earlier at the end of last year, and also discovered that she was HIV positive, and due to neglect and failure to provide adequate health services and attention to Roxana, Roxana ended up passing away. And so ICE is an institution that is violating immense amount of human rights. And so we're calling attention to this and to many other trans migrant community members in detention center. For example, the campaign that we are collaborating with the Black LGBT Migrant Project is a program through the Transgender Law Center. They're leading a campaign called Free Udoka Nweke, who is a genderqueer Nigerian individual who was facing deportation proceedings. Thankfully, 3 weeks ago, Udoka has was released, and his asylum-seeking process will still take, hopefully not years, but it, we foresee that there's still a long process ahead for Udoka specifically. Please feel free to look up the Black LGBT Migrant Project to get more information. And also, we are supporting a campaign to free Chin, a trans Chinese migrant who is currently in ICE custody. Essentially, we're living in a time where we've seen many of these cycles of the disposability of Black and brown bodies, and that's very much what we have going on with conversations about immigration and things like that. Since the 1830s, our country has had legislation dictating who may come into the country and who may not, and exponentially facing quotas on the amount of communities of color that can enter the country. And Familia started, as I mentioned, 5 years ago. We began organizing during the Obama administration, seeking for immediate attention and solutions that things like the DREAM Act and DACA, deferred action for childhood arrivals, were not achieving for parents and elders and essentially family members that were still being separated from each other and put into detention centers facing deportation proceedings. And we are we're known for the work nationally. And as we started, it was in Santa Ana. I mentioned that there was a detention center that held trans women. And the Santa Ana City Council had approved contracts without the community's knowledge. There was a lot of organizing that went around that. Essentially, what ended up happening is that the city council, after 2 years of organizing, did stop the contracts with the local ICE detention center. And we were soon being informed that our trans siblings were being sent elsewhere around the country. Our organizing platform kind of expanded internationally just a few years ago, and exactly around the time of the passage of same-sex marriage in the country. Our national advocate, Genisette Gutierrez, was invited to the celebration at the White House, and Genisette Gutierrez, along with coalition partners at the organization Get Equal, organized a civil disobedience interruption to the president's speech around pride and justice in a month at the time that marriage equality passed. And Genisette specifically was calling to question the lack of justice that immigrant communities and undocumented communities are facing in our country. And this catapulted our platform, and we have more following also of Latinx leaders and people that have also been through detention centers and people that have been resisting essentially racist policies that allow ICE detention to profile people that look, quote unquote, that look undocumented. And so we've been organizing to uplift the leadership of trans and queer individuals specifically, because we do acknowledge that our trans and queer present world has always been led alongside people of color as well. Marsha P. Johnson, Celia Rivera, Miss Major, and many others that, thanks to their efforts, we were having more conversations and organizing more around the liberation of trans and queer individuals. And so also as a movement that is working on advocating for the abolishment of ICE, we acknowledge that our movement is so closely interwoven with that of Black liberation struggle, and many leaders before us that have advocated for prison abolition, folks like Angela Davis, an academic scholar and activist writing Are Prisons Obsolete, and even to contemporary times, that those conversations have led ways to an analysis of policy and laws, like Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. And so it is important for us as individuals of Latin American descent or individuals that come from Latin America to make those connections with our Black Latinx community and our Black diasporic trans and queer community members. And so more recently, in August, we gathered in Albuquerque with roughly 200 Black and brown migrant individuals. And we are working on bridging our movements and connecting more on purpose to resist a lot of what's happening to our community members of the campaigns that we have with Roxana Hernandez, with Udoka Nweke, and with Chin. And so we invite everyone, in Portland to follow us and look up Familia Trans Queer Liberation Movement and support the work that we're doing.
Yeah, there's no question but that the intersections, especially around incarceration issues, around employment issues, mm-hmm. housing issues, place us all in, more vulnerable mm-hmm. situations, right. Which then logically, produce the statistics that we're mourning today. Mm-hmm. It's and if we can't join together, then as smaller minorities, we have less influence and less strength. So we all have to join together. We have to work on this stuff together. Yes, we Absolutely. All have our individual unique issues as populations, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the intersectionality here is a huge theme today. It's important, and that's why we chose to close the show with this segment. Mourn your dead, but fight like hell for the living. Thanks for being with us, Umi.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you for being with us tonight. Be at peace.
We'll
close with Amazing Grace, sung by our own Nicolette Schweitzer.
Thank you, everyone.
Portland 90.7 FM. Next up is Calculated Conversations with David and Ken. You can call us here at KABU 503-231-8187. Calculated Conversations up at about 7 o'clock.
KABU Community Radio is hiring a development director. This 32-hour-a-week position develops and implements the yearly fundraising plan, develops promotional and press materials, and supports the anti-oppression work of KABU. Send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kabu.org or send to KABU, Development Tire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KABU important? Deadline to apply is Sunday, November 25th at midnight. More information on the development director position is available at kabu.fm/development-hire2018.
Hi, I'm J.J. Johnson, host of the Gospel and More program, Sundays from 6 to 8 a.m. We are collecting yarn to make wool caps for the homeless community. Drop off yarn and caps at KBOO 20 Southeast 8th, Monday through Fridays, 9 to 5. We are also looking for knitters. For more information, contact KBOO Gospel and More at gmail.com or go to kboo.fm/gospel-and-more. The yarn and cap drive will end January the 31st.
This is KBOO Portland, listener power.